Well, good afternoon or evening or morning, wherever you might be, everyone, and welcome to Satsang. I'm John, and I've come here today to speak with you about Ramana Maharshi's self-inquiry. The longer that I find myself in this role of speaking to people about Ramana Maharshi and about self-inquiry and about the simplicity of it, the more the profound simplicity of self-inquiry reveals itself to me, by which I mean the more I become cognizant of how fundamentally, absolutely, radically, impossible to describe-ably simple self-inquiry is. Self-inquiry, and I am assuming, I really don't have any way of knowing, but I'm assuming that there are those of you here today who have not been in Satsang with me before, although you may have seen me on YouTube or listened to my podcasts or things of that nature, but have never actually been directly in Satsang with me. So I want to make it really clear what it is that I actually come to speak about whenever I'm in satsang. So I always kind of start at the beginning. And the beginning is Ramana's insight, which it's important to understand that Ramana's insight struck him not as a result of any spiritual practice or any spiritual life or spiritual beliefs, but quite by surprise, in an experience of the fear of death. He was a 16-year-old boy. He, so far as I can tell, had no particular interest in spiritual matters other than a 16-year-old boy in a sort of religious Hindu family in India at the time might have. He certainly wasn't a practitioner. He certainly had no guru or teacher apart from the guru that he acknowledged after the fact, which was the hill, Arunachala. He certainly had no training or spiritual vocabulary with which to understand what had struck him. But what had struck him was an insight that is universally present, really universally present in the spiritual life. Although we misunderstand it more often than we understand it. And that insight is that the only problem, the sole problem of human existence is a false belief about what we are. And we all harbor that false belief. It is universal in human beings. And since the only problem, if this is true, And I have to say also that this is another thing that kind of differentiates Ramana's insight and the cleanness of it and the simplicity of it from most of the spiritual teachings that we receive in the world. The amazing thing about it is that it is entirely confirmable. You can try it and see and discover for yourself whether there's any truth for it using the ordinary natural intelligence and discernment that is a characteristic of human existence. Now this insight that our only problem is a false belief about what we are and that that false belief is that we are our lives, this insight is really easy to understand, right? You can see that. It's really easy to understand what it is that he's claiming. We believe ourselves to be our lives. Well, duh. Yeah, we do. And that's a false belief. And that false belief gives rise to every moment of suffering, confusion, aggression, whatsoever. Furthermore, if that's true, if the only problem is a false belief about what I am and what I believe myself to be is my life, then and my life. By what I, my life, what I mean by that is this whole apparatus of me, the thoughts, the history, the expectations, the beliefs, the structures, the reactions, the responses, the consciousness itself, the ordinary consciousness itself. And if it's true that that's false, that I am not my life, and that that belief gives rise to all the problems, then the only solution I can find, obviously no solution by anything I do within the life itself, because, well, it's not me. The only solution is the truth. And this is Ramana's insight. Startlingly clear. Startlingly clean. Startlingly simple. This is the claim of Ramana Maharshi, and I absolutely join with him gladly and humbly in making that claim to you, that the only problem in all of humanity is the false belief about what we are, and the only solution is the truth. And furthermore, that the truth is easy. There's nothing hard about it. The truth is not spiritual. The truth is not some new state of spiritual enlightenment or spiritual understanding or clarity or any of that. The truth is you, not your life, not your thoughts, not your story, not your desires, not your aversions, not your brilliance, not your stupidity, but you, just you. And that truth of you is here now, always. In fact, the essence, the heart and soul of the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi is the moving of attention deliberately and consciously to the simple, uncomplicated, unmediated experience of being here. Nothing could be easier. You are here. You can see that. You can see, if you consider it, that this experience of being here has never changed, never departed, it's never absent. It is untouched by any experience whatsoever. It is untouched by experiences of vast sorrow and heartache. It is untouched and unchanged by experiences of vast bliss and clarity and openness and beauty. No matter what the experiences are that arise within you, you, if you will check and see, are always the same. You are the same now as you were when you were 5 years old. You are the same now as you were yesterday. You are the same in the midst of gigantic confusion as you are in the midst of wondrous understanding. You are here, simply, totally, absolutely here. If you stopped for 1 second right now, right this moment, close your eyes and see if you can find the background experience that makes it impossible for you to deny that you are here. Just a glimpse of that. Just the slightest taste of that unchangingness. Same. Just you. Same. Now that here-ness, that silent, indescribable, present reality is the target of the inquiry. It is that experience of being here, simply, totally, here, that Ramana directs us to in the teaching of self-inquiry. And it is that experience of the perfect here-ness that is, well, you. And you know it. And here's Ramana's promise, and my promise, and the promise of anyone who has tried this. If you will, whenever it occurs to you to do so, it doesn't matter what else you're doing, it doesn't matter what practices you are participating in, what practices you are trying to get rid of, what you're trying to do to make your life better, or what you're trying to do to stop trying to make your life better. If in the midst of all of it, whenever it occurs to you, you will stop just for 1 second and turn your attention back to that simplicity of being here, just to taste it just for a second. And it's very pleasant. You'll find that you like to do it. If you will do that as often as you can, repeatedly, again and again, the more often the better, over time, since this is the truth of what you are, over time, this acts like a medicine and gradually wipes out, destroys, eradicates, makes vanish the belief that you are your life. Now, this, of course, has nothing to do with the way your life is unfolding. It doesn't have anything to do with whether the apparatus of your personality is clear or not clear, is confused or not confused, is happy or unhappy. It doesn't have anything to do with whether the apparatus of personality is seeking anything or trying not to seek anything. So the effects of this practice on the apparatus of personality take quite a long time to manifest. I mean, the apparatus of personality, after all, is just kind of a mechanical creature, the product of complicated and long-standing cause and effect in time. And you have nothing to do with any of that. So the changes in your personality, the changes in your life, they will happen because changes always happen in life. Life is always changing. But the main thing that you can expect to take place as a result of trying this practice is that over time you will lose the sense that there is anything at stake in your life. You will lose the sense that you are at stake in your life. You will lose the sense that there's something really important about whether in your life you are happy or sad, whether in your life you are clear or confused, whether in your life you are trying to get better or trying to stop trying to get better. You will lose the sense that there is any crying need to be right in this apparatus of your life that you have believed yourself to be. And as that sense that something is at stake vanishes over time, what is revealed is what remains, which is you, at peace, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. The impulse of aggression, the impulse of clinging and resistance, gradually, over time, weakens and departs, leaving you just as you have always been. Nothing new, nothing changed, just you, that which never changes, that which is always here, just you, as always. So this is the practice, this is the claim, this is the insight. The insight is that we suffer from a false belief about what we are, and that false belief is that we are our lives. The practice is the truth, by which I mean the practice is to consciously try to get the most subtle glimpse of this ever-present here-ness that you are, and to do that as often as you can. Now, this is not a spiritual practice, not in the way we have come to think about spiritual practices. So it doesn't have a spiritual outcome in the way we have come to think about spiritual outcomes. After all, it is you, and as we have always known, you never change. Never change. But if you will do this, and this is, if you will do this, you will come to see that it is as I can promise you from my heart it is, and as many who have been with me over time will co-sign, it is medicine, plain and simple. It's not spiritual. It is medicine. And just as you would take medicine to rid yourself of an infectious disease, and you would take the medicine without knowing in the as it unfolds the battle that's going on within your body to destroy this insidious and infectious disease, so too, if you will take the medicine of self-inquiry over time, you will get well. You will lose the fever, the hot smoke of confusion. You will get well. Before you know it, you'll be well. Before you even can say, wow, that's over, it'll be over. But it's medicine, and you have to take it. You have to take it as often as you can. It's simple. It doesn't require a lifetime commitment to trying to become anything. You already are everything you need to be. It doesn't require abandoning any practice that you are currently participating in. It doesn't require abandoning any beliefs or any religious or spiritual ideas that you have. These things are all beside the point of the reality of what you are. So just taste yourself. Just whenever it's possible, look at yourself. Look at yourself. Look at this face that is the reality of you. And this medicine will do its job. And I promise you that. And that's all I have to offer. And that's all Ramana had to offer. Actually, Ramana tried not to offer anything. He ran from us for 12 years. But we tracked him down, and we are all the beneficiaries of Ramana's unexpected and surprising realization. So try this practice when you can. Look at yourself whenever it's possible for you to do so, and see if what I am telling you is not true. Okay, I think I'm done for now. I don't know whether you know how this works, but if you want to speak with me, you should either right-click on your name, which you can see in the panel there, or click on the menu that says Self. That's funny. And in the menu that says Self, you'll see a menu item that says Request Voice. And when you request voice, I will see that. And as far as I can manage to do it in the order in which you ask to speak, I will do it in the order you ask to speak. So I'm happy to be here with you. Any questions? Anybody want to argue with me? Gabor, let me give you a voice here. Are you there? Seems to me we had this trouble last time. Perhaps you're having technical difficulties with your microphone or something. I am going to move on to somebody else, and you let me know again if you manage to get things straightened out. By the way, those of you who are on Macs, I should have told you this. Those of you who are on Macs don't have, I don't think you have the request voice thing, so you have to send me a little text message. But, okay, I see a number of people, and I'm not sure who was first, so I guess I'm going to start at the top with Anti-Anti-Camper. What a name. Anti-Anti-Camper.
Hey, John, are you there? How you doing?
I'm very well.
And good, you? Good. This is good. This is Mark Ettinger. We met in L.A. a couple times.
Uh-huh.
And okay. First, I'd like to thank you for doing the webcast. I moved to the East Coast, so it's much harder for me to attend Satsang now.
Well, here you are, though.
Right, right. Thank you. Thanks for doing the online Satsangs. So I have two questions related to the blog or the your podcast called The Desire for Truth that's on your website.
Okay.
Okay, so my first question is in that podcast, you mentioned that really all desires really come from one source, even though they appear diverse. They really come from a desire to know who you are.
That's right.
So what I'm very curious about is, even though I first came across this essential question about 20 years ago, and in spite of recognizing its importance and devoting a considerable amount of attention to it over the years, I find that I still have you know, various strong interests, things like, you know, my career and things like that. And I'm just curious as to whether I really have seen the truth of what you were pointing to in that particular podcast, because I'm wondering why I maintain these other desires if, in fact, really the one desire is about knowing oneself.
Okay, well, there's two questions, two things here about what you're saying. One is that, and let me deal with the most important first. Are you here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you know that?
Yeah.
And you know what it feels like to know that?
Yeah.
That's all there is to self-inquiry. So if that's what you're speaking of in attending to this, then that's the self-inquiry that I teach. If you look at that, that certainty of being, as often as you can, that's all that's required. That's the first thing.
Okay, okay. What was the second thing?
And the second thing is that that the understanding of this doesn't need to manifest in the personality, in the apparatus of personality. And in fact, nothing needs to change in the apparatus of personality other than that what already always does change. Now, you say that, you ask me why would you still have the desire to make your career better or whatever. Well, why would you not? What's the difference between having the desire and not having the desire? What is the problem with that desire?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a problem per se, but the implication that I heard in the podcast, I've heard it other places, is that if you really see clearly that all desire really has its source in this one quest, then most of your other desires lessen in intensity, and that's I don't really think that's happened to me.
Do you feel that there's something at stake in the fulfillment of these desires?
Well, something at stake. Yeah, I would say so. In other words, when my career goes well, it affects me one way, and when my career goes poorly, it affects me another way. So I guess.
Now let me interrupt you. Is that really true? I mean, you can see that what you are is this certainty of being. Is that affected by whether your career goes well or poorly? Does that change?
Well, that seeing that I am sort of, that I am this objectless being, if you will, or the certainty of being, is not, in fact, constant. I mean, oftentimes I feel like I'm this body-mind organism subject to all
Right, and that's okay, but that's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you, is this certainty of being changed in any way by what happens in your career?
No, that is not changed, no.
So what's the point of saying that it affects you when the truth is that it does not? I mean, I'm certain, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be cute here. I am certain that there is the experience within your life that there is an effect that is dependent upon whether you do well or poorly in your career. But even that experience itself, the experience of either satisfaction at doing well or dissatisfaction at doing poorly, even that doesn't touch you. So what I'm suggesting is that what's the problem? Why would dissatisfaction trouble you?
Well, the realization that it doesn't touch me, I would I would say that that's a pretty rarefied, it's a not uncommon state, but it's a rarefied state. I mean, it often seems to affect me, even though if for some reason I calm down and turn my attention, it's clear that, you know, the awareness of being doesn't change. But in those moments...
But you see, what you are demanding here is that there be some state that appear within your person that is permanent and that forever wipes out any dissatisfaction or trouble that comes as a result of being a person in the world. And no state is permanent. All that's permanent is you. So I'm not suggesting that states won't continue to come and go within this personal consciousness. They will. They have to. They are the bread and butter of personal consciousness. What I am suggesting is that doesn't matter.
Right. I guess I haven't seen that not mattering clearly.
Well, and okay, so then what I urge you to do, and I have no way of knowing what your actual experience with the practice is, but what I urge you to do is to take the medicine, by which I mean whenever it occurs to you to do so, and especially when things are going poorly, or even when things are going well, especially in those times, just without trying to rid yourself of either the good or the bad, check and see if you are the same. Just look.
Right. Right.
And see that that's medicine. It's not going to wipe out the states that come and go within you.
Right. And that actually that is a segue to the second question I have related to your podcast, Desire for Truth. So
okay,
the second...
Will you do that?
Oh, absolutely. I do that. I do take the medicine as often as I possibly can.
Okay.
So I have a question about the medicine. That's my second question.
Okay.
So, in the Desire for Truth, you at some point you say, you know, how hard can it be to really turn your attention to this certainty of being? I mean, so the implication is that it's not difficult, but I actually find it difficult. I don't necessarily find it difficult to remember to do it or to turn my attention to do it, but very quickly, because being is not an object, it doesn't have any color, it doesn't have any sound, etc., I actually find it difficult to keep my attention there. In other words, I find it difficult to maintain the medicine taking.
Right, and that's not important. The important thing is to take the medicine, no matter how, and in fact, the effort to maintain the present consciousness of what it feels like to be can itself be counterproductive. The medicine is simply to do it whenever you can for as long as you can. It really doesn't matter whether it slips away very quickly. You will see in time that the idea that it slips away very quickly itself is false. That in fact, the truth of the matter is that there is never, ever a second in this life when you are not aware of the reality of you. That this is the background of it all. And the medicine is to consciously taste that. But there's no way that you can make the personal consciousness remain in the experience of being. That's just medicine. And over time, you will see that just as I wish I could think of a metaphor. This is so hard to talk about because it is so simple. When you're in daylight, you're not consciously, specifically aware of the presence of light. but there is not a moment in daylight when you are not aware of the light. And it's the same with this reality of being that you are. You can bring your attention directly to this background of presence and taste it and skitter away from it. But even when you skitter away from it, you are not unaware of it. So my advice is to take the medicine and to keep it up for as long as it takes until you, well, I guess, don't do it anymore.
Okay, will do.
Is that clear? Is that helpful to you?
It is. It is, John. Thanks a lot.
Okay, you're very welcome. Let me see if I can figure out who is next here. Justin.
Hi, John. Can you
Are
hear
you
me?
Here? I can hear you
can
very
you hear
well.
Me?
Very well.
Great. Hello.
Hello.
So good to hear your voice. Okay, so my question is, the misbelief that I am the story of my life, it seems like the same thing as ego, and the same thing as thought, and the same thing as everything I know consciousness to be. It's just another name for the same thing that we talk about all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you hear that okay?
I can hear you.
So my experience isn't that that belief dissipates. I mean, I don't know if I've ever felt that dissipate. What I sense is that the labeling changes. And when I'm inwardly focused or directed, the definition of what it is just ceases to be judgmental rather than it disappearing. I can still see it, just like my thoughts happen all the time and continue with their didactic monotone commentary. I mean, it still happens. The belief that I'm the story even still happens. I can watch it, but it just doesn't seem to have the charge of being positive or negative if I'm taking the medicine. Does that?
Yes, that makes sense to me. I mean, that's what I mean, I think, when I say that you lose the sense that you are at stake in your life. And your life, when I say your life, I mean the whole of personal consciousness, your story, your thoughts, your beliefs, your expectations, your desires, your aversions, so that the idea is not to rid yourself of any of those things, because we've tried that and had no luck with it. The idea is to rid yourself of this unseen belief that something's at stake, that if I don't get it right, I am in trouble. And I think that may be what you're reporting, although a little more intellectually than I would.
Well, I've heard you say, and other teachers, especially when people, it seems like with addiction problems, talk, kind of refer to having an alcoholic body, if you're an alcoholic, or having a drug-addicted body. It kind of feels that way of the story of my life also, that I just have a brain or body that is addicted to the story of its life. And when you have a separate perspective of that, somehow you can live with it but not be judgmental about it, so it doesn't need to be pulled closer or pushed away.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay, well, just checking in.
Okay, I'm happy to hear from you, Justin.
Happy to
hear
from you, John.
I'm going to go find somebody else, and I see that Gabor has written me a couple questions, because apparently Gabor can't speak. And the first question is, was this unchanging component of my experience accessible before I was born? This unchanging component of your experience unchanging component of my experience. You have always been here. You were not born, nor do you die. Your life, however, was born and will die. The personal consciousness that you have believed yourself to be takes birth and leaves this world. You have never changed. And you also ask, do we all access this same component? By component, I am assuming that you're talking about this reality of what you are. And yes, it's always the same. The rock has the same beingness as do you. And which should answer the rest of your first question as to whether it was accessible before you were born. It is accessible always by all, no matter whether Gabor is present or not present, whether Gabor is sleeping or awake or dead or alive. And I hope that helps. Okay. I'm asked here, is it wrong to love one human being above all others? Well, the question, of course, is for whom? The question is, for whom would it be right or wrong? The plain and simple truth is that nobody has anything to say about how these lives unfold, about what desires appear within them, about who, yes, for you, well, when I say for whom, guest three, I wish I knew your name. When I say for whom, what I mean is not for that to be answered, but for you to find out who this me is. Whence arises this me that loves one human being or does not love one human being above all other? The plain truth, and which might be Daniel. Daniel from New Jersey, a homeboy. The plain truth is that none of us have anything whatsoever to say about how these personal lives unfold. And if you consider it for just a second, you'll see that that's the case. We want so much for this to be the way it should be and that to be the way it shouldn't be. And none of it helps. We might want to love one human being above all others and fail to do so. We may want to stop loving one human being above all others because everybody tells you you're wrong or because it feels like you're wrong, and nothing will change that from happening. The question is not, the imperative question is not, how should I live my life? Because the truth is that the life lives itself. The imperative question is, what am I? And when the inquiry into this question is practiced over time, the sense that there's something at stake in deciding whether you should love this girl or not love this girl will vanish. And whatever it is that is to happen will happen, as it will anyway. What I am interested in is not in bettering. I don't have any problem with trying to make your life better or trying to do things truly rather than falsely. That's just not my, not what I'm here for. What I am here for is to try to persuade you to just take the medicine of looking to see what it feels like to be as often as possible and see if that does not wash away the sense that there is something deeply important about this question. Wash away the sense that my very existence is at stake in this. I hope that's helpful. I'm going to try Nigel, who who is kind of hollering at me in the text. Just a second, Nigel, and I'll get scroll down to you. Nigel, are you there? Nigel? Nigel, when you get back, let me know, okay? Let me see, who am I here now? Karen in West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Karen?
Karen?
John?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello. You're probably going to have to turn
your...
Your speaker's
your
way
speaker's
down.
Your speaker's way down.
Okay. Are you there?
Are you there?
I'm still here. I'm just trying to figure out how to do that.
Do you have a knob? Do you have a knob? Volume, knob? Volume?
Let's see. Yes. Found it. Hang on.
Okay.
How's that?
Better.
Better.
I'll go a little lower.
I still hear myself.
How's
listen,
that?
I can...
Is that
that's
better?
That's much better.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been taking the medicine and enjoying it. It's been enjoyable medicine. And I am finding that there is a sense of there being less at stake in actually what happens in this life. One of the questions that I have, though, is many times you'll say that we don't have to stop any of the other things that we're doing, that they don't do any harm, or they don't, nor do they do any good necessarily. But I guess I feel like that these other things, I mean, to be honest with you, there's not that much that I'm interested anymore in. I mean, I really am interested in just discovering who I am, what I am. But yet, there are things that come up in life, and there are some desires, you know, especially regarding work. So it seems like pursuing some of these other things takes away time from looking at myself. And I just wanted to see if that was true or if it's just another idea.
Here's the thing, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter whether it's another idea. They're all ideas. But that doesn't matter. The fact is that you have had no success in trying to stop this from taking place.
The desire from taking place. Yes.
Right. And I can tell you that it really doesn't matter. And that as long as you continue taking the medicine, it'll have its effect. I'm not surprised that you would want to spend much more time resting in this peace and much less time chasing desires. But you don't have anything to say about that.
Yeah, I guess that's still the unseen idea, the idea that we do have control and a say in how these things unfold.
Yes, and that too will fall at the feet of the truth of what you are as you take this medicine over time.
I can see, you know, wanting a direction, you know, like, okay, do this, don't do that. You know, as far as, you know, there's this one particular desire regarding work, you know, and it would require a significant amount of time. But I'm just going to have to keep looking at myself and letting it all unfold one step at a time. I can't expect you to tell me what to do.
That's right. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And you will either find yourself investing the time in fulfilling this desire or not. But whichever happens, you are the same.
Right. I understand that, and I know that's true, because I'm finding I'm the same regardless of what emotions are passing through. If I'm fulfilled in one moment or unfulfilled or happy, sad, angry, loving. I'm the same. But there's, I guess there's still the idea of, well, you know, if I get lost in this, well, not if I get lost, but if I engage or I pursue this timely work situation, I may not experience myself as I am.
Yes, I can understand why that fear would arise. And I'll tell you how to rid yourself of it. Try to forget yourself. Try to get lost. You hear me?
Yeah. That actually doesn't happen.
Right.
I mean, because I have, as I've been taking the medicine, I have been, you know, there are periods of time that are full of activity. And they're not necessarily any less peaceful than the times that I just spend on the couch looking at myself.
Hallelujah. this is a wonderful report. I'm really happy to hear from you.
I'm glad you brought it out, because I wouldn't have believed it myself if I didn't say it. But that is.
I know.
That's the experience. It's true.
Yes.
So
that's wonderful.
Right. So either way that this plays out with this work situation, it's ultimately it's the same.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you for your generosity.
You're
so welcome. Thank you, Karen.
Okay. Goodbye.
Keep in touch with me.
Most certainly.
Okay. Goodbye. Okay, who else do we have here? Anyone? Guest 2, try once more. Guest 2 is Ba, is that right? Are you there? Well, I guess we'll just keep trying, and I will move on again to Guest 3, or Guest 4, rather, whose real name is not Guest 4, but D. So here we go. D? D? My, oh, my. I wonder why we have these difficulties. Must all be good, right? Okay. Let me see if I can find anybody else here who wants to speak. My, oh, my, there's quite a crowd here. I'm really happy about this. Guest 3, I am afraid of... Yes. I... If you're still here, are you still here, Guest 3? Yes, you are still here. This fear is to be expected. It is, however, of really no consequence. If you will merely do what I ask you to do, and right now, in this moment, right as we're speaking here in this moment, just stop for 1 second and close your eyes and see if it is not true that you are here. Just look at what it feels like to be here. And see whether the fear has any effect on the certainty that you are here. Just that. And do that when you can. And you know, you can always email me at johnsherman@riverganga.org. And your mic is muted, Guest 3, actually. I see now. I'm going to try Nigel again, because Nigel has popped back up again. Yes, no effect. That's right. So just do that whenever you can. Okay? But you see, don't you see, if the fact that you are here is going to change and go through states of being joyful or being not joyful, then this is the same old, same old. This reality of what you are, that What you need is the truth, and not the truth as you believe it should be. What you need is to see the truth. And I tell you that if you look at this truth, which you already recognize that nothing touches it, if you look at this truth as often as you can, what you will discover is that you never knew what joyfulness is. You are joyfully here. You are joy itself. Okay? Keep in touch with me, okay? I'm going to give Nigel voice here in just a second. I have a from David. Would you agree that the single point of free will is like a toggle switch that can be switched by choice from noticing what I am to not noticing what I am and back again, regardless what happens in the story? I would agree that the only choice that we have whatsoever, the only manifestation of anything that could be called free will, is the choice to affirmatively move my attention to noticing what I am. The loss of that conscious noticing of what I am, I have nothing to say. You have nothing to say about. It's not a toggle. It's like a push to talk. If you push it, if you move your attention just for a second to the reality of what you are, that's your choice. When you fall away from that, that's not your choice. That's just the way things are. Okay? And you're very welcome, guest three. Okay, here I go. Back to Nigel. Nigel.
Hi, John. Can you hear me?
I can at last.
Oh, great. That's good. It's good to be back. Hello?
Hello. I'm happy to hear you. What can I do
for
you?
Yeah, it's really good to be. I was just really just thinking about what you've just said, and one of the things that seems evident is that we really don't have any choice but the choice to be where you are.
That's it. The choice,
I mean, it is.
The choice is, in this moment, to just stop for a second and see what you are, what it is to be here. And when that moment passes and consciousness skitters away from it, you don't have anything to say about that. That's why it's medicine.
Yeah. Hello? Yeah, completely. Completely, yeah.
That's why it's medicine.
I've become really aware of, through the process of doing this practice, I've really noticed how there is an enormous resistance to being here. I mean, very often we spend most of our times actually not wanting to be here. You know, it seems to be one of the prime activities of the ego.
That's true. Yeah, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
You can expect a little lag, Nigel. But
yeah, that's okay.
True. That's true. That is a chief characteristic of the ego, whatever the ego is. The ego is a phenomenon that is a part of your life. And that's one of its chief activities, is to prevent itself from seeing its own source and the reality of its source. But that's okay, too. That really doesn't hurt anything. Over time, that goes away also. Always over time.
It does. It's very simple, but it demands an incredible amount of determination.
Determination in the moment.
Yeah. Just determination to really fight for this, you know, almost. It's almost like a very gentle battle with. I don't know, just pulling yourself back into being here.
Yes, we are, for the most part, in this belief that we are this personal consciousness. We are driven by the need to not rock a boat.
Yeah.
And that's what somebody was telling me, wrote to me here, about a fear of taking the medicine. There's a great habitual need within personal consciousness not to rock the boat, because it seems like I barely have things held together and from
That's
moment
wrong.
To moment, you know, so that the suggestion that it's possible to just stop for a second, and that the belief that I am my life itself is false require considerable determination to look and see what what's true, what's here.
But in actual fact, it's the only choice we've got. So we've got, there's no other solution. This is the only possibility. You know?
That's right.
And I think
that's right.
Once you've got that really clear, that becomes the focus of your life. It doesn't really matter what's going on in your life at all. You know, I mean, my life hasn't changed much at all, but my focus has.
Yes, that's right. That's a report from, that's an authentic report. It doesn't necessarily change the life very much at all. The life changes, but it always has been changing.
Yeah, but more or less predictably, you know.
Right.
Well, actually, to be honest, I mean, there is a sense of predictability about it, but there's also an incredible sense of mystery and wonder about, you know.
Yes, that's right.
There's less
that's
projecting
true.
Into the future and thinking of the past, and you just... Because none of that activity serves any purpose at all. It's just pointless.
That's right. What a wonderful report.
Oh, it's really nice. I tell you, you've really condensed what I've been experiencing. I mean, I was starting to doubt. Well, actually, I'm not. My faith has been, I've known for a long time that this is the only way out. And so it's been my focus for a long time. But it's always been very surprising. At each stage, it's never been what I've expected. And it's just becoming beautiful now, really, really simple and sweet. I love that word to use to describe it, is sweet. It's so sweet sometimes. Okay, well, I'm going to love and leave you. And
okay.
I hope we can get together sometime. Okay, thanks a lot, John.
Me too. Okay,
I really appreciate this satsang. It's beautiful. I will. All the best.
I do too. Okay. Maurizio, did you want to speak? Maurizio?
Yeah.
Maurizio?
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah.
But I can hear me too, so.
I can hear me too, so.
Maybe you could turn your mic, your speakers down.
Okay. You can hear me well, John?
I hear you very well.
Yeah. Well, it's great to talk to you in person, finally. You know, my question is this, more or less. You know, I started to take the medicine. I just like the way you put when it was about Christmas time. And at that time, I can condense my state of mind as really desperate. For a lot of reasons. That's not very important, really. But and then, well, things changed very much, you know, from that point, for sure. but it seems that now I kind of sort of lost a little bit the focus on the questioning, you know, the questioning that is related to the taking of the medicine, which is the what I am, you know. In other words, I suppose my question deals with how intense was my deep desire, you know, to take the medicine when I was so desperate, and now it feels like I'm getting used to it in a way, you know. I'm not really sure if this is a good sign or a bad sign, you know.
Well, does it feel like a problem?
Not really. Not
yeah,
really.
I don't
well,
think
there
a
may
problem.
Be, you know, there may be a, yeah. It's just like maybe, you know, just like in the back of my mind, there is something that somehow says, that it kind of, it's not deep enough or doesn't go deep enough, you know?
That, I suspect that that may be just a hangover from past spiritual ideas. But tell me this, or more to the point, look to see whether this is true for you. When this nagging sense that it's not deep enough is present, are you changed?
No.
Are you affected by it?
Oh, no, definitely not.
Yes. So you see that in this way, that the arising of these vasanas, these unconscious inclinations, are your ally in this. Because as these negative feelings arise, they can be the Dharma bell that invites you to taste again to this reality in order to confirm that you are still here, still unchanged, still real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the natural habitual inclination of the apparatus of personal consciousness to think that the coming of negative experience is a problem that must be eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if nothing's at stake in these negative experiences, then it matters not whether they come or go. You see?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Well, thanks. That was very clear.
You're very welcome. Very happy to speak with you, Maurizio.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I feel really grateful that I have come across your voice one day, you know.
Me too.
That's all what I can say.
Okay. You're very welcome. Thank you. I'm going to see who else there
Thanks
is now.
Again.
Where are you, Maurizio?
I'm in Rome, Italy.
Aha.
1:30 a.m.
Oh, my. Well, you should go to sleep.
Oh, my. You should go to sleep.
Okay. I'll stay in touch, please.
Yes. Thank you, John. Thanks again.
Okay. I have a lengthy text. I see guest two again, and I'll get with you in a second. I have a lengthy text message here. Everything is as it is, isn't it? Yes, it is. Everything is as it is, isn't it? Yes, it is. Whether we talk about it or not, whether we talk or no talk at all, asking, searching, doing this, not doing that. Every action that happens, happens in now. It is essentially enough to be said about anything, everything, isn't it? Freedom, peace, witnessing, being, momenting, the same labels for the same unlabelable. I am happy, I am sad. Both sides are fine. I am taking medicine, I am being sincere, I am pretending, fighting, hurting, pushing. Both sides are fine. Playing video games, getting drunk, sitting in zazen, doing yoga, taking medicine. There is not more worthy and less worthy state of being. There is being. Moment is. What it contains is irrelevant. The whole isness doesn't need to be backed up. It is enough. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no need to do anything. There's no need even to take the medicine. Who cares? But so long as there persists the feeling that something needs to be done, that this is all that needs to be done. When the feeling vanishes that something needs to be done, then, well, the feeling that something needs to be done is gone. And there's no need to do anything, as always. It is easy enough to understand the intellectual basis of this, and that's one thing. But to be actually finished with the feeling that there's something I got to do is something entirely different. If that feeling is not here, then of course there's nothing to do. And yes, both is fine. Taking medicine, not taking medicine. but so long as there persists within us the feeling that I need to do something or to not do something, then taking this medicine is what's needed. Looking to see what I am is what's needed. When that feeling vanishes, well, you won't even think about it, will you? Okay, I'm going to try guess two again. I think I might know your name, and maybe not. But are you there? I guess not. Over time, we're all going to learn more about the technical play of this particular form. In the meantime, I don't see anybody else. Oh, here, Mary Kay. Just a second, Mary Kay. Mary Kay, are you there?
Yes. Hi, John. Can you hear me?
Your volume is very low, but I can hear you. Where are you calling from?
From Windsor, Ontario, Canada. It's nice to talk to you. Actually, some of my questions have been answered. You've answered some of my questions. I have one question. Well, it's a statement, really. The experience of beingness sometimes doesn't feel very substantial to me compared to being in the body. And when I think of death, I guess I must have a fear of death. My preference would be to be in the body and not in beingness.
Well, that's to be expected. There's nothing wrong with that. You
I
see,
don't...
the... Go on.
I don't have, I guess, the sense of peace. I shouldn't say that. I have experienced that peace. I often will walk and listen to your podcast, and there will be a momentary recognition that happens when I do that. And that recognition actually is a little different each time. The last time it happened, it was sort of an intense but momentary recognition. But I find that compared to being in life, being in my life, as not very substantial. These are momentary experiences compared to the rest of my life.
That is absolutely to be expected. You see, when we speak of what brings us to self-inquiry, first is the dissatisfaction that we have with the way our lives are going and with the ups and downs and swings between feeling good, feeling bad, feeling not much of anything at all. The underlying conviction that whatever it is I'm doing is inadequate, and that life doesn't really fulfill its promise, no matter how compelling it may be for us. And it's that, even if we don't know how to articulate it, it's that that brings us finally to self-inquiry, to this question of what am I really? Now, an important thing to see is that there is nothing about the practice of self-inquiry that seeks to change anything at all about the way you feel about your life in your life. Really, there's nothing about the practice of self-inquiry that has as its goal even doing away with the feeling that life is very important. Life is important. The promise of self-inquiry is not that you have to choose the insubstantiality of beingness over the substantiality of life. It's not that. It is that no matter how you might prefer it to be, you are that beingness. And the growing conviction, the growing underlying certainty that this beingness, whether you like it or don't like it, is you, releases from your life the feeling that something is at stake there. It doesn't mean that you don't still love your life. It doesn't even mean that you don't still hate your life. And the peace that I speak of is not a passing phenomenon. These passing phenomena are quite beautiful and quite welcome, should not be discouraged. But the peace I speak of is this peace that is already here in the certainty that you are here. So I guess what I'm saying is that don't concern yourself with the fact that you prefer life over beingness. Concern yourself with seeing the truth of what you are, and everything else will be taken care of without you needing to know or understand it. Everything will be taken care of. Can you hear that?
Yes, I can. That takes some faith, I think, some trust in, well, just trust, I think, to continue to do that. I glimpsed it, and I would love to have it all the time.
But you do have it all the time.
But it doesn't feel like I have it all the time. It doesn't seem like I have it
all the
time.
And what I'm telling you is, that is only because of the strength of this belief that you are your life. Now, that belief isn't bad or good. It just diverts you from the ever-present reality of this sweet peace. There's no need, how can I say this? It's very easy for you to stop for a second and notice the reality of the certainty that you are here. That's really easy. It doesn't take any trust or anything at all to do that. It's not like you are being asked to give up your firstborn child or to abandon your life. What you're being asked to do is merely to, whenever it's possible for you to do so, stop and notice this certainty of being. And everything else will be taken care of. Do you follow me?
Yes, and I think that I trust that, John. And I want to thank
you. Okay. You're very welcome. I think you trust that, too. And it really is to be expected that these thoughts and concerns and doubts and so forth will play out for some time. If you just do what I ask you to do over time, everything will be clear to you in a way that I can't make it clear to you. Do you follow that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Mary, you're very welcome. Please keep in touch with me. Let me know how you're doing.
I will.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, I see guest two once again. And I'm going to try it once again, and then we're probably going to bring this to an end. Are you there now? Oh, well. But you can hear me, and even though I can't hear you, I know you, because you are the same as me, exactly the same as me. And the truth is that, as somebody spoke to me about in a text message earlier in here, okay, before I do that, we're going to go to Esther in Florida. Esther?
Yes?
Uh-huh.
Can you hear me?
Hello, how are you? Yes,
good,
I can.
Good, how are you? Well,
good.
Thank you so much for doing this online satsang. This is my first time, and I'm very excited to be part of it.
I'm excited to have you here.
Thanks. I have a question about something you said earlier. I don't think that I quite understand the difference between the desire for the truth, which makes me wanting to do things like being part of the satsang or wanting to take the medicine, and letting go of the desire of doing something in the way you describe it. It seems like sometimes doing things help me to become more aware of my unchanging nature, but what I hear from you is that that desire also has to disappear in some point. And so I was wondering if you could explain the difference between the two, if that makes any sense.
Well, it does make sense, and the question can only come from the fact that I haven't spoken clearly enough about what it is that I'm trying to say. You don't have to give up anything. You don't have to let go of any desire. The truth is that we have tried this business of letting go, of giving up and all of that, and it has not worked. It's my experience that it doesn't matter whether you hold on to or let go of any desire whatsoever. All I am saying is that the only thing that works, the only thing that helps, is to, whenever it's possible for you to do so, by which I mean whenever it occurs to you to do so, is to stop for a second and look to see, what am I really? All the rest of it, all the desires, all of the practices, all of the positive practices, the negative practices, and so forth, they can continue just as they do. They cannot hurt you. They cannot help you, and they cannot hurt you. You are exactly the same, no matter whether these desires and practices are going on or not going on. All that's asked of you is that whenever you can, stop for a second and look to see what it feels like to be here. Just that. Just that. And then see what happens over time. Do you follow that?
Yeah. I guess the next thing that comes to my mind is that, you know, that I worry that certain things can slow down the process. And I know as I'm saying it that that doesn't come from the true nature of who I am, but it's obviously in the right. back of my mind.
Mm-hmm. Right. And even when that feeling that the things I'm doing can slow down the process is present, you can stop and see whether that feeling does anything to you at all. You follow mm-hmm. me?
Yeah.
You don't have to get rid of that feeling. You don't have to get rid of anything. You are here.
Now, what I have heard from different teachers is that if you surrender, that also helps. And again, it's kind of going to the same thing, that helps to speed the process. And so it's like there's a part of me that wants to help the process to happen. And yet, at the same time, I know that there's nothing I can do to slow it down or to speed it. It's like I have to just wait for itself to happen.
You so just have I feel to like take I'm... the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. You just have to take the medicine. And if you can surrender, surrender. Have you had any luck with that?
At times I have.
Yeah, well, if you can surrender, surrender. But even when you're surrendering, take the medicine. See for yourself whether surrendering helps mm-hmm. you or mm-hmm. harms you. I think what you will discover is that whether you are surrendered or arrogant and prideful, you are the same. You are unchanged.
Okay.
You follow me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You are that which has been the same since it was the same when you were 5 years old as you are now. You're familiar with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just taste that. That's the medicine. Just touch that whenever you can. Just look at yourself.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Stay in touch with me. I'd like to hear how you're doing.
Okay? I will. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Namaste.
Okay. Namaste. Again, Shimon. Again, Shimon. It doesn't matter what you do and what you don't do. If you don't want to do the medicine, don't do the medicine. If you want to, do so. There is no problem. There is no problem even when you think there's a problem. But, if you feel like you have to do something, look and see what you are. That's all. Just look and see what you are. Okay? Okay. Anybody else here? Okay. Excellent. This has been quite wonderful, spending this time with you all. I know that, as I just said to somebody who I don't remember exactly who or what the circumstances are. There is no way that I can describe to you what the experience of being is. There is no way that I can tell you what it feels like to be, because you are. And I will give you voice from Israel in a second. The temptation is for me to try to tell you what it feels like, for me to try to give you the experience. But if I can give you the experience, then I can take the experience away from you. What you are has never changed. What you are is here always, unchanging. From Israel, are you there?
Yes.
I'm happy. What's your name?
My name is John, George.
John, John. Well, we are the same.
Yes.
What can I do for you?
I'm from Israel. I heard about 50 Cent. I'm searching.
Could you repeat that?
I'm searching for 50 Cent, and I can't find him.
Oh, you're searching for something different than this. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
You're in the wrong place. Although, maybe you're not in the wrong place. Do you know what I'm about here? You know what we're talking about here?
No.
We are talking about the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi. Do you know who Ramana Maharshi is?
No.
Do you have any interest in knowing?
Yes.
Ramana Maharshi was a man who lived, who died in 1953. He lived in India. And as a 16-year-old boy, he was taken by the fear of death. He was overcome by a certainty of imminent death. And in that experience and fear of the certainty of imminent death, Ramana discovered that there was no problem anywhere to be found except for the fact that he believed himself to be his life, and that this was a false belief. And he discovered that this false belief that I am my life is the source of all problems and suffering and misery whatsoever, and that it is absolutely simple to be rid of this false belief, since the reality of what we are is ever present. It is here. It is the certainty that I am. And that if we would be willing simply, we don't have to do anything, we don't have to give up anything or take on anything, but that if we will simply, whenever it occurs to us to do so, stop for just 1 second and see that I am here, certainly, absolutely, undeniably here, that in itself, over time, wipes out the false belief that I am my life, and with it the desperate feeling that something is at stake here. And what remains is this endless peace, no matter what's happening in the life.
I understand, but I can't find 50 Cent here, right? I can't find 50 Cent in the TeamSpeak, right?
No, you cannot.
Okay, peace.
Okay, we're going to close this meeting now. I am, I don't see anybody else wants to speak. Listen, my friends, I am so grateful to you for having been in Satsang with me today. We are still learning how to use this technology effectively, but it is unbelievably wonderful that we can meet together like this from all over the world and speak about what's true together and consider and reflect on what's real together. So we are going to do this again in a couple of weeks, and Carla will speak to you in a moment and tell you when all that's going to happen. Thank you from my heart for this satsang. Thank you for your willingness to see the truth of what you are. There is that is precious beyond all comprehension. Om Shanti. I'll see you later.